So I looked ahead a little bit, and Brahma's prayers, this, we're on text 37 this evening, and Brahma's prayers end with text number 40. But the topic continues until 47. So I think we should wrap, because there's some... We can go ahead? Yeah. Everything's okay. I'm looking at the lady of the house back here.
I was wondering if slides are to be shown, I can remove this.
You're very enthusiastic. As they say, too much enthusiastic. So back to... We'll go ahead with this pastime that may take a number of days to finish. But what we'll begin, hopefully before I depart, is the next topic. You want to know what the next topic is? No. She said no.
No, she only said.
Description of the kingdom of God. That's next. And we'll go through the Bhagavatam, the four Kumaras visit Vaikuntha, that whole chapter. Description of the kingdom of God. Just read the verses of the description of what's it like. And then another class will be Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Gopakumar goes to Vaikuntha, and then Gopakumar goes to Ayodhya, and then Gopakumar goes to Goloka. So what's it like? Little travel advertisement. And it's, so that's our topic after this one. So now this one, text 37, it's still Brahma praying, he's speaking directly to Krishna. A little review that he plunged in an ocean of Braja Prem. He's been glorifying the residents in Vrindavan. He expressed that through their senses, the demigods can use their senses like cups through which they, the demigods, by the mercy of the resident Vrindavan, can then experience the sweetness of Krishna's lotus feet. Then he prays to become a blade of grass like Uddhava did, outside of Vrindavan or in Vrindavan to catch the dust. He speaks of the residents of Vrindavan. He speaks of the unique, the degree, the intensity of love of the resident of Vrindavan is such that how is it possible for Krishna to repay? As he repaid or reciprocated the Putana, giving her a position in the spiritual realm. These, and all she did was just disguise herself as a devotee. She put on a sari, so she went to the spiritual world. She did a little service. And Agha and Bakha, they didn't do any service, but they were just assisting her who did some service, and they went to the spirit, they got liberation too. So how are you going to reciprocate with these residents of Vrindavan? Other than giving yourself to them, but you've already given yourself to them, so how are you going to reciprocate with them? And then yesterday evening's verse was the Yavat Tavat verse, the whereas someone doesn't take that position of shelter, then the Tavat is the consequence. Because of this, then that. As this, so that. And it's not a pleasant ride. The material, the life without the shelter of Krishna is an unpleasant ride. And not sometimes, it's always like that. So then, text 37, my dear master, Brahma is considering himself Krishna's servant, and he's the master. Like Prahlad, the relationship is subordinate and the master, servant. My master, although you have nothing to do with material existence, you come to this earth and imitate material life just to expand the varieties of ecstatic enjoyment for your surrendered devotees. Now this verse Prabhupada has explained in terms of Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna says there's three reasons why he comes to this world. You know the famous verse, Pritranaya Sadhunam, Vinashaya Chaduskritam, Dharma Sangsthapanartaya. So Prabhupada explains Krishna can do all those things through somebody. Doesn't need to come to do those things. And sometimes he sends somebody to do those things. So when he comes himself, it's to reciprocate with his loving devotees. Because who can do that other than Krishna himself? Here's the BBT purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that just as a lamp does not seem to shine as brightly in sunlight as it does in the shade, or as a diamond does not seem as brilliant on a... That's too much. I can bring it closer, but it's too loud. It's ringing back, so I put it a little further away. If you want me to bring it closer, I can bring it closer, but would you rather me I do that than you fool with the volume? What would you like? You're the controller, and I'm the servant. Ah, then you can control it very easily. You lost your job. Okay. I'll go back. So a lamp in the sunlight versus a lamp in the shade. A diamond does not seem as brilliant on a silver platter as it does on a plate of blue glass. The Lord's pastimes as Govinda do not seem as amazing in the transcendental abode of Vaikuntha as they do within the material realm of Maya. Lord Krishna comes to the earth and acts towards his pure devotees exactly like a devoted son, boyfriend, husband, father, friend, and so on. And within the darkness of material existence, these brilliant, liberated pastimes give unlimited ecstasy to the surrendered devotees of the Lord. Paragraph. In his Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada quotes Lord Brahma as follows. Quote, it's in this chapter. I can also understand that your appearance as a small cowherd boy, a child of the cowherd men, is not at all a material activity. You are so much obliged by their affection that you are here to enthuse them with more loving service by your transcendental presence. There is a theme that's repeated several times. Krishna is nobody's son, but Krishna is the son of Yashoda and Nanda. That is, it's a pastime. That which is the source of everything, he who is the source of everything, has no mother and father. But the affection, parental affection, the fountainhead of parental affection is Krishna, the parental affection that exists in the spiritual world. And he comes to this realm to show that parental affection. So he's placed himself, by pastime, in a subordinate role. In a subordinate role. And we know that one of the greatnesses of Krishna is Parthasarathi. He places himself in as the taxi driver, the chariot driver, the subordinate inferior position. In Vedic culture, those who are the chariot drivers, they're Shudras. Although they may be, you know, a chariot driver of a king, the position is that of a Shudra, of a king. Although they're on the same chariot. It's just the function is, you know, not just inferior, superior. It's quite, menial task being the chariot driver. But he's the chariot driver of Arjuna because of their relationship. And he likes. So he likes the affectionate exchanges with the residents of Braja, which that same affection towards Krishna doesn't exist outside of Braja. There's no, Narayan becomes the chariot driver of his devotees in Vaikuntha. It's just, it bounces. It doesn't fit. And then intimacy and affection, as it increases, he enjoys. He enjoys their affection, reciprocates with their affection in becoming their subordinate, a little boy. Of course, in his pastime, he grows up. But it's not like, anyway, he's like it says here, like as if he's one of us, although he's not. He's subordinate, particularly in Braja. And then after 12 years, he leaves Braja. 13th birthday is outside of Braja. Then he goes to school. So, Vishwanath writes, some think that the Purna Brahman, Purna Brahma, becomes a son of Braja. Becoming a son in Braja is not real. Not absolute. And that those devotees are an illusion. In reply to this, Brahma recites this verse. And then paraphrasing his message, quote, though you are always beyond the material influence, you always are situated within the material world and take up forms and relationships similar to material forms and relationships of sons. But your form and relationships are not false like those of the material fathers and sons. Those forms and relationships, being transcendental, are real and eternal. Though your pastimes are eternal and beyond material influence, they appear similar to material activities. Why do you need to imitate material activities? In order to increase even further the bliss of the devotees, who can then taste from some of, even further the bliss that the devotees have tasted from some of your pastimes. So I'll read the sentence again. Why have you done like this? In order to increase even further the bliss that the devotees have tasted from some of your pastimes. And continuing to paraphrase. As a lamp appears bright in the darkness, but insignificant in the sunlight, or a diamond does not glitter on a white background, but appears brilliant against a dark background, the pastimes do not appear so astonishing in Vaikuntha as they do when performed in the material world. Though Braja is spiritual, just as Krishna appears like a mortal person, so Braja also appears like part of the material world. In this place, the pastimes appear most wonderful. We're getting some through Brahma, and then through the explanation of our acharyas, we're getting some illumination about the uniqueness of Krishna's pastimes on earth. There's other references where the pastimes of Krishna on earth are in some features, they're more attractive than his features in Gokula, the spiritual realm, or Goloka in the spiritual realm. One of them that's spoken of is Krishna actually encounters demons. Of course, some people don't like that, but some people think that's really sweet. Or the pastime of birth, which doesn't exist in the spiritual realm, but it exists here. And his pastimes as a small little child. Of course, those pastimes are eternal, but the uniqueness of how Krishna does what he does, how he appears the way that he appears, and so on, there's a sweetness. And the sense of danger of the demons enhances the shelter-taking and sense of dependence upon Krishna. Now, acharyas say, even in the spiritual realm, there's no demons, but there's the bhava, the emotion that, here comes a demon. And there's no demon. But they have that mood and that shelter taking is there. But here Krishna is performing those pastimes. Many of you know, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written, those pastimes have a special purpose for sadhakas. Like us. It's Krishna helping us to overcome obstacles on our path to Braja Prem. That's his analysis. And it's very detailed. And if we actually do have this summer retreat for the youth, that's going to be the theme. And how that helps in our chanting. Okay, so here's another dimension that is, the sweetness, the all-attractiveness of Krishna is enhanced by the backdrop of apparently worldly pastimes in this material world. So here's Jiva Goswami's commentary. What is the purpose of your pastimes? They are to spread intense bliss to the surrendered people, those of Braja, and myself, by sweet pastimes rather than pastimes displaying power. And he gives examples from scripture. Jiva Goswami. This is from chapter 8 of Canto 10. Chapter 8 of Canto 10 is the chapter that we discussed earlier in this 14th chapter. That's Gargamuni's name-giving ceremony and what he said to Nanda, who is your son. That's the earlier part of chapter 8. And then there's other childhood pastimes of Krishna from that infancy in chapter 8. So here's a quote. Shukadev speaking, what pious acts did Nanda perform to cause such affection? And what pious acts did most fortunate Yashoda perform so that the Lord drank from her breast? Now we understand they did, you know, they're not posts, you know, they're not a post that you can achieve by any means. They're eternal associates, but that's his expression. Another is from the same chapter, 8, Canto 10. Great devotees sing of the activities of Krishna in his childhood, which Vasudeva and Devaki could not experience, and which even today destroys the sins of all people. And then going to an yet earlier chapter of 10th Canto, chapter 7. O Lord, hearing about the Lord full of qualities, destroyer of suffering, attractor of the senses, who through his appearance causes pleasure to the ears and great attraction to the mind, destroys all disinterest in the topics and all thirst for material enjoyment, and produces prema for the attractive Lord and friendship with the devotees. Please speak the Lord's pastimes if you think I am qualified. So that these are, the pastimes have all these benefits that are, why does the Lord come and perform these pastimes for these reasons mentioned? The pastime of Krishna with the people of Vraja are eternal. This was already indicated in verse 32, where the friendship of the Lord is unspecified in time, and followed by the words, greatest bliss, complete and eternal. Verse 33, the same chapter, just, you know, 31, we're up to 37. 31 is where it starts, this plunging into the ocean of prema. 30, anyway, it concludes that whole section. This, yeah. So 33 again indicates that the pastimes are eternal. And giving up Vaikuntha and praying for birth to attain the foot dust of the people of Vraja, and describing the Lord who is the life of the people of Vraja, sought by the Vedas, again the eternal nature of the pastimes is seen. Not able to repay his debts, the Lord then appears in the world as a son, over unlimited kalpas of time. Though there are many people filled with attachment and delusion, the material kind, this is no obstacle to the pastimes. Brahma takes as his personal goal of life attainment of the form of Krishna, a cowherd, described in verse 1 of his prayers, related to the people of Vraja and to the devotees outside. Brahma fears that some people with material vision will think that the pastimes are material. What can be said? This verse answers, though you are untouched by matter in your pastimes and constantly engage in pastimes with your devotees and appear in the material world with your devotees, you imitate the material world by being born like a human being, but show the great glory by that act. What is the purpose of doing that? Why? It gives joy to the devotees, both the people of this world who are not eternal and the surrendered devotees who are eternal derive bliss by seeing and hearing about the eternal pastimes which manifest on earth. An ocean of bliss spreads because of the pastimes which appear on earth. Interesting. Then Sanatana Goswami, short, says the same points. Though you are beyond the material world, you imitate the world, being a son, etc. Why? You do this in order to give bliss to your devotees by hearing about your pastimes related to Vraja. Do you really perform pastimes as a son with the devotees? You who cause others to exit the material world become fixed in spreading bliss by pastimes with the people of Vraja. So the meaning, just an interesting way of saying, his pastimes are real and his pastimes are eternal, and the purpose of them is for increasing the pleasure of the devotees and attracting the hearts and the minds of the conditioned souls who aren't averse to Krishna but can then appreciate the blissful sweetness, just like Brahma is saying he's one of those people. The his activity is worldly. I mean, it's super gifted. We're doing something. You go in the kitchen, you cook the sabji. And he goes to his office and creates a universe. So the level of what he does and the level of what we do isn't the same. His capacity is astounding. But one can think of it as material, because he's dealing with the material elements and creating something. He's in charge of that creative principle, and he creates something. It's a useful something, but he creates something. So one can look at it as material, and it's not what the residents of Vrindavan are doing. Now, the residents of Vrindavan, one of the verses we heard is they look also material. They're doing household duties and raising children and having occupations and paying taxes to Kamsa, and they're doing seemingly worldly things. But their consciousness is totally absorbed in Krishna consciousness with great affection and great submission and love and happiness. So they're otherworldly beings. So this topmost person in the universe, Brahma, wants to be a blade of grass to receive dust from the feet of the residents of Vrindavan there because of their exaltedness. So it's their otherworldly dimension. It's not their... They look upon themselves, we're insignificant. We're just village people. We just live simply and do simple things, so... Nothing special about us. And the special about them is being disclosed in this whole section, starting with 31. Why is it that they're considered so exalted by Brahma and Uddhava and highly learned and highly placed persons? What is it about them? The message is one of the purposes of the message is to draw our attention to that love, is to stimulate within us that love. By appreciating them, it's like when I was traveling somewhere in India, there's a little girl, she's probably 7, and on the side, they're parents, smilingly said she has this fascination for gymnastics. So she goes to 3 gymnastics class a week. And she's already got a hero. She's emulating. And I forget her name. It's an American girl, Allison something something. I said, why not Simone Biles? Well, she's too much. That's too high. So she's got her other model. But so a little girl's got a role model, and little devotees, it's good to have a role model. And for those who are followers of the Bhagavatam, the residents in Vrindavan are the role model. In different rasas, but they're hearing about them. I mean, we don't have videos of, as this little girl has videos of her role model doing gymnastics and practicing and performing and thising and thatting. And so they didn't have, technology. They just had, we have this message of the Bhagavatam. We don't have videos of the Brijvasis living Brijvasi life. We just have this narration. But if we hear with carefully, and regularly and become cleansed, it says that the sound vibration draws us there. Just this morning I heard a recording of a group that was visiting Suryakund, and a few classes ago, we were speaking about the position of the Brijbasis, the associates of Krishna in Vrindavan, and how Nanda and Yashoda, they worshipped Narayana. But others had other deities that they worshipped, like the young gopis worshipped Katyayani. And it's a celebrated part of Radharani's pastimes that she was a worshipper of the sun god. And the role of the sun god plays a very significant role in Rupa Goswami's Vidagdha Madhava. I haven't read it, but some parts of it I'm familiar with. And it starts with Krishna's having departed. And Radha's with the gopis and they're going mad. They say so many things. And something to the effect, Radha decides to give up her life and plunges into the river Jamuna. And the sun god comes and rescues her and takes her to his abode because she's a worshiper of the sun god. And then later, the sun god delivers Radha to a place where she becomes Satyabhama and she marries Krishna. And then one by one, or the other gopis that wish to have Krishna as her husband, they also are delivered to that position where they become queens in Dwarka. But they don't have the same mood. Exactly. But, it fulfills their desire. That Radha was a worshiper of the sun god there's many pastimes. And one of the places, one of her favorite places where she would go to worship the sun god was Suryakund. And this is, a Gaudiya interesting point. Jagannath Das Babaji did his bhajan at Suryakund. You familiar with that? Jagannath Das Babaji? Jagannath Das Babaji. Anybody here not know who is Jagannath Das Babaji? Radhapriya, you're okay? You know who is Jagannath Das Babaji? You're just absorbed in the pastime. Okay, as long as you're okay. A contemporary of Jagannath Das Babaji was a celebrated, some other Babaji, whose name I can't remember. And he was, during the time of Rupa Goswami and the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they were, as followers of Lord Chaitanya, they were able to not only see the pastimes of Krishna, but they were able to enter into the pastimes of Krishna through mantra, through sound. We can't do that. We're not there yet. But the potency is there, and we're not cleansed enough to. So many generations later, this one particular Babaji, apparently some also had similar capacity, by meditation, and he wasn't from our Gaudiya line, but by meditation, he was able to have experience of Radharani and her worship of the sun god and her devotees, her associates. It's like a very detailed story, but he somehow had this fascination to experience Krishna's pastimes outside Vrindavan, specifically in Dwarka. And in his dreams, Radha would come in his dreams and instruct him, give up this idea. Three times. But he couldn't give up the idea. And so he left. He defied Radha's instruction to him, which came only in a dream, and he was wondering, maybe it's just a dream, maybe it's not. So he went. And the place where he went, they had this procedure, not just of applying tilak or vermilion or something, some brand on his body, a mark, a crescent mark or something like that on his forehead. And then he went back to Vrindavan, and Surya Kundan was doing his meditation, and he couldn't enter into the same meditative state that he had access to before. And he was feeling disturbed because he was accustomed to that experience. And then Lalita appeared to him in a dream, instructing him that because you went against Radha's instructions, she's not going to be available for you anymore. Or like, essentially, she crushed you off her list. And he was devastated. So he decided to give up his body because it had this mark, and now so he entered into a state of meditation. This is not so long ago historically, that just by his meditation, his body began to incinerate. And almost all of his body was gone by the fire of his meditation. And Jagannath Das Babaji assisted him to completely give up his body. Now, the source that I heard this from was a very authoritative source. I'm not going to say their name. It wasn't Dinabandhu. But you know, the position of the residents of Vrindavan is exclusive. We read this in Nectar Devotion. It's love they give everything. And the mood of that love is everything. Now, when Uddhava went from Mathura to Vrindavan, he was instructed by Krishna to do so. And then he went back. And Balaram went to Vrindavan from Mathura to appease the residents of Vrindavan. Krishna will soon come, and so forth. But we're not on that platform. And so we're dependent. And the mood of Braja is a very, very special mood. And we have to be very careful. Have to be very careful. It's a great qualification to get Radharani's mercy, and in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we have gotten Radharani's mercy somehow by the cyclic succession. The mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one gets the mercy of Radharani, right? And by the mercy of Radharani, you get the mercy of Krishna and Braja. And we're very fortunate, and we, recognizing that fortune, don't transgress it. We stay with fidelity to that mercy, and we're small people, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but if we apply ourselves, that mercy will come, just like, you know, your attraction for kirtan. That's mercy. And there's lots of people that had no attraction for kirtan, they didn't even know what it was, that now have attraction for kirtan. And not only attraction for kirtan, but attraction for kirtan in the line of disciplic succession from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there's a lot of purification for such recipients of mercy. And then such recipients of mercy in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have an obligation to somehow, by means suitable, extend that mercy to others. I'm kind of speaking off topic, but it's not. Here's another one. Prabhupada, someone supplied this, a letter from Prabhupada to Shama Dasi, 1968, April or something, 1968. And Prabhupada was saying something to the effect, it'll be sent out to the mailing list, but something to the effect that when I gave you initiation, I accepted you as my eternal daughter. And we are together eternally as father and son. And you make effort to follow the instructions you have received. And you assist in giving the spreading Krishna consciousness to others. And by spreading Krishna consciousness to others, we will be together by our chanting. I'm chanting in another part of the world, and you're chanting over here, and we will be together through the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, not exactly those words, obviously, but something like that. So this is Lord Chaitanya's mercy coming through the cyclic succession. We're the recipients, covered recipients, of a big load of mercy. And, you know, hearing these very, very elevated pastimes of Krishna with the residents of Vrindavan, for them, it's just back, circling back, it's joy. He becomes their son. He becomes their lover. He becomes their dear most friend in a way that others may have a friend or may have a son or whatever. But it's, The transcendental experience of the residents in Vrindavan is so attractive for them. He just gives them joy in reciprocation with their indebtedness and their attachment to him. And then for those that aren't residents of Vrindavan, like Brahma and us, it becomes attractive. So that's what's coming to us through the Srimad Bhagavatam, through Krishna's pastimes, hearing them in disciplic succession through our acharyas and through Prabhupada and the followers of Prabhupada in the case of this chapter, to attract our hearts and their minds to the residents of Vrindavan. It's very attractive, very fortunate. So we're not necessarily appreciating that as we're going along, just kind of scratching our heads with trying to understand things that are being expressed and so on. But there's a spiritual potency that awakens transcendental love for Krishna just by hearing these pastimes and the preceding pastimes as well. So let's see if there's some comments or questions here. Yeah.
Two questions, Maharaj. First is about this elevated devotee. You spoke about who left his body after going through that meditation and all that. So my question is, once you reach to that level, where he was able to get into the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, and then he kind of fell down. Is it really a fall down or?
No. No. It's Krishna-centered. But if Radha tells you, don't do something, and you do that something, and you're on that level.
Yeah.
So he felt something because of that. It's a transcendental emotion. It's not fall down in the same sense, but the intimacy is unique.
Hard to understand.
It's not easy to understand. Yeah. It's not easy. Don't use worldly yardsticks to understand that one.
Second question, Maharaj, is about Brajvasis, the gopis, worshipping demigods like So how do we
understand?
Yeah.
Those persons that they're worshipping are not the worldly demigods. That's how we understand. That is to say, everything that's in the demigod realm has its spiritual counterpart. The prototype is in the spiritual realm. We had that discussion this morning. Your son learned a new vocabulary word, prototype. It's the spiritual realm, because there was this discussion this morning. Did you hear the morning class? There's Goloka, and there's the place where Surabhi came from. Surabhi came with Indra to Vrindavan. And the acharyas, all of them were saying, same thing, there's the prototype Goloka, and then, excuse me, there's the prototype Surabhi, and then there's cows. And her place is Goloka in the demigod realm. So, but there's Surabhi cows in Goloka. And there's a Surabhi cow in her own planet in the demigod realm. I never heard it before. So we're visiting lots of new things in the course of reading our Acharya's comments. So this, the response to, is to your question. Their worship, Radharani's worship of the sun god is not the sun god that the people of this world worship. Like those who chant Gayatri Mantra. Even people that don't have initiation in Gayatri Mantra know what it is. And some people take Gayatri Mantra as worship of the sun god. Impersonalists take it as worship of Brahman. And Vaishnavas take it as worship of Surya Narayan, the deity, the personality of Godhead, who is presiding on the sun planet. Now, A or B, Radharani is worshiping the sun, or Radharani is worshiping the personality of Godhead, like Nanda and Jasoda, they're worshiping Narayana, and they have Krishna as their son. But they're worshiping the transcendental Narayana, and the gopis are worshiping the internal potency Katyayani, not the demigoddess Katyayani.
Not for material demands.
Not only their intention is not material, but the deity that they're worshipping is not material. Now there's scriptural, there's purports in, right in the Bhagavatam that say they were worshipping the internal potency because it's only the internal potency that can deliver the relationship with Krishna as one's husband. A material demigoddess cannot deliver that. So their consciousness is transcendental. Their bodies are spiritual. Their life is in that spiritual realm. They're not worshiping. It may look like to us that they're doing worldly things, household things and worship things and pious things, but it's not. Any more than Krishna is doing what Krishna does, and it's not material. Like his lifting of Govardhan Hill. It's not just a story. So, their worship is of the, this is Bhakti Siddhanta's language, prototype. Like, it's mentioned specifically in Brahma Samhita, the first Gayatri mantra, the first mantra that Brahma received was from Saraswati. But there was no anything, because there wasn't even creation yet. There was no consort Saraswati. That's the demigoddess Saraswati. It's the prototype, the spiritual Saraswati, the internal potency Saraswati from whom he received. So it's a different lens we have to look at these things with when the associates of Krishna do things. A little mind-bending, huh? Because
yeah.
We're used to looking at things with a certain lens, yeah. And that you can't use that same lens anymore because they're in another realm.
By hearing these pastimes again and again, it takes away our sins.
What happens?
It takes away our sins.
Yeah.
So it is hard to believe, but we are doing it, but sometimes it is hard to believe.
Well, I don't recommend that you stop doing it, because something will happen if you do. Something will fill that space and it'll become, you know, inauspicious, what fills that space. So it's not, but it's spiritual auspiciousness, not the material auspiciousness. There's a difference between religious and transcendental. Material piety through auspicious activities, like doing religious ceremonies, worshiping demigods and following the sacrifices of the Vedas, etc., etc. That's good. And then this is beyond good. So all it's saying is this is beyond good. I know somebody, this is just a little story, a teenager, well, maybe he was 20 years old, young American fellow. He said, I want to be really sure that I'm not just, you know, imagining that chanting Hare Krishna is good for me. I know that it's said, but I want to find out. And his plan was he's going to stop and see what happens. And he spoke to me about it. Everyone else advised him. He was part of Guru Granth Maharaj's bus program, Krishna Fest. Nice chapter of history. So he went away. And about a year and a half later, this young fellow came up and said, you're right. I said, excuse me. I didn't recognize him. He looked very different. You know, besides his hair, just his whole facial, everything looked different. He said, remember me? I was the one that said, you know, and so I stopped and I got beat up really bad. So now I'm convinced. But it was, what a price to pay to become convinced. It diminishes sins. Taking Krishna prasadam is sanctifying your existence, as opposed to even if you're vegetarian, you're eating sin. Krishna says, well, it's hard, you can say, well, that's hard to believe. But, you know, don't try it otherwise. It's truth. It's coming from that source. And therefore we can accept it, not just notionally. You have something? You're going to read the online questions. All right.
Can you kindly elaborate the blade of grass aspects in Sri Vrindavan Dham? To cultivate genuine humility in a day-to-day life of mind to please Guru and Gauranga.
Well, is it on or off? Okay, so the blade of grass is extreme, and we don't have to go to the extreme. I mean, if somebody is really, really, really elevated, they may go to that extreme. But it's a principle, and that's the principle of humility. And devotees that are really, really, really elevated, they're really humble. And in that humility, they may speak like this. Not only speak like this, actually mean it. And that is the, so the, following the path of Guru Gauranga, Trinadapi Sunichena, that is a profound humility. And the more that one becomes trying to connect with Krishna, you know, like trying to chant attentively instead of the other way, we realize we can't. On our own, we can't. We're distracted and tiny and troubled and conditioned and contaminated, and we can't. So we there's an option. We can just go on muddled chanting, or we can strive. And then that mood of humility says, I have to receive mercy. And the more one goes in the direction of striving in the mood of calling for mercy, humility grows more profoundly. Up to the stage where Brahma, who knows, according to what some statements in scripture, 100 lifetimes of flawless execution of varnashram duties entitles one to become situated in the post of Brahma. I mean, try for 5 minutes. What to speak of 100 lifetimes of flawless... So how elevated is Brahma? So how humble is Brahma? And now he's encountering the residents of Vrindavan and Krishna in Vrindavan, and he's become profoundly humble. And so he's saying blade of grass. So we're not there yet. But it, you know, in principle, there's dedication to, submission to, eager to connect with high reality kind of mood in advancing in spiritual life, which requires humility. You know, the items of knowledge is the first one in the list. Amanidvam. Adambidvam. Without humility, you're not going anywhere spiritually. So then as it grows, it becomes more profound. So that's how we can understand what Brahma is praying for.
Next question. I'm trying to understand what it means to always have Krishna in the center. Example, do the cowherd boys never enjoy just playing among themselves?
Of course they enjoy playing among themselves. That's what they do. And Krishna's at the center. So we had a 20-minute discussion on this topic a few lessons ago. So whoever's asking this can go back and listen. But I'll just make, you know, a couple of simple statements. Just like the Dhruva topic, it's all about me to it's all about Krishna. And there's a transition to go from it's all about me to all about Krishna. So the cowherd boys, they're enjoying, and there's, you know, boys of this world, they're enjoying playing, and it's all about me. And the cowherd boys, they're playing, and it's all about Krishna. And Shukadeva Goswami marvels, very similar to this one here. We heard how many pious activities, krita, punya, punja, this phrase that's from Shukadeva Goswami, how many pious activities these cowherd boys have performed to have Krishna as their friend and play with him. But it's not mundane piety. It's not demigod worship and helping little old ladies across the street and planting trees. It's spiritual piety, spiritual activity, that kind of punya. And how many lifetimes? So there's eternal associates, and there's some that are joining the eternal associates. So there's an eligibility that makes Krishna-centeredness Same for us. And the dedication to that Krishna-centered us, centeredness, will take its different forms. I mean, I'll leave it to your imagination. I've been visiting lots of homes in the past few weeks with this coronavirus thing. And different homes have Krishna-ness in different ways. Like, you know, because of your involvement with the Gita camp and teacher and somebody creative. And some other homes and some other homes and some other homes. But, you know, it's a Krishna-centeredness that different individuals, according to their nature, they're expressing it. And of course, I'm sure also in different degrees of distraction, in different degrees of attraction, and so forth. But Krishna-centeredness is, it's a cultivation, but we should know that it's totally natural. It's within the soul, and souls are within everything living. Here's a nice plant over here. So that plant is getting a lot of good fortune, although he's just sitting there. You know, hearing the kirtan and hearing the arti and hearing the Bhagavatam, you know, it's just a plant or spirit, soul, and plant body. But all kinds of, so, Krita Punya Punja. It's just whether you're believing, having faith in, I'm becoming freed from sinful reaction just by hearing, it's acting anyway. And the more we're making conscious choices towards Krishna-centeredness, the more we're going to experience Krishna-centeredness up to this limit of the residents in Vrindavan. They do their things, but the Krishna-centeredness is out of sight. Even for Brahma. 100 lifetimes of flawless varnashram duties. And it's for him, they're out of sight. So that there's a cultivation, largely through sound, or starting with sound.
My question was asked by Amol Prabhu from Houston.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
There's one question, please. Question is from Shashi Rekha Devidasi. Jai Krishna Guru Maharaj, I have read that there is no influence of time in spiritual world. May I please know what does it mean? Is that the reason that past time in Vaikuntha are eternal?
Well, it's not the reason why, but it's part of... I think the question is not so clear. Time is eternal, or time as we know it is absent. Prabhupada's words, time is conspicuous by its absence. But there is time, and that's eternal time. So while time is eternal, it's confusing, or it doesn't fit our material paradigm because activity or pastimes requires time. Things don't happen without time, just like we're seated here. And it took some time to get seated here, and then we're passing some time together, and then we're going to go somewhere and do something, and that takes time. Time moves matter. So what are events where there's no time? How does eternal time result in activities? Because that sounds like past, present, future. But time is eternal. And the answer is, it's Yoga Maya flexing her muscles. She's moving things according to the pleasure of Krishna's intentions, and things move, although it's not within time, though it appears to be within time. Because otherwise, how do you have pastimes? I mean, it's the word, pastimes. In eternal time, where time doesn't pass. therefore it's the internal potency. It's a curious topic. It's a very mind-bending topic. Time is a really fascinating topic. That's it.
This question is from Amrita Keli Mataji.
Who?
Amrita Keli Mataji.
Okay.
You mentioned that Radharani married Krishna as Satyabhama in Dwaraka. I was just curious why we do not have the deities of Lord Krishna with Satyabhama. Though we worship Lord Krishna with Rukmini, it is connected to their moods. Rukmini being in the mood of service and Satyabhama being in an authoritative mood towards Krishna.
Oh, well, there's a temple. What's the name of the deities in Chennai? Satyabhama Krishna, isn't it? Yeah. No, there's a Radhakrishna. I visited Chennai before they moved to their new temple. And there's Radhakrishna deities there. And it's Satyabhama Krishna, no? No. Well, it certainly could be. So the answer to the question, it could be. Somebody likes Rukmini Krishna and somebody likes Satyabhama Krishna. It's just fine. Anything else? You have something?
No, it was beautiful. No question.
Okay.
Yeah, one question. What is chanting? We take it very casually because we hear that chanting we can do anyways without having bath, wherever we can do. So that, by hearing that, we take it very casually. But when we read that, I always forget that chapter that when a yogi has to meditate, he has to sit on a kusha grass or certain mood is to be made to do yoga practices very sincerely. So for chanting also, should we do it in that mood, like very sincerely? And
well, I don't, different persons are different. And although it says what you said it says, it doesn't mean therefore we take it casually. Rather, it can mean to someone that just see how merciful is the holy name. So even, you know, the hippie culture people, they can chant and become purified. They don't have to go through many, because they won't get there. So it's a merciful form of Krishna. And since it's such a merciful form of Krishna, let me surrender myself. So let me qualify myself to get the fullness of that mercy. It can work the opposite way. And, and each of us have our natures. Some like rules, some don't like rules. That's okay, chant. Now, the more that one becomes purified, it's not like I sit straighter because, you know, I'm rule conscious now. Before I wasn't. But it's more of an awakening of a regard for the object that it's really, really, really awesome. So let me give my attention more and more. And those that give their attention more and more, they sit straight. You know, that is, they're more careful about everything. It leads to deity worship, and certainly with deity worship, it's not casual, it's not whether I bathe or not. you know, etc. Om pitra pavitro pavitrova. Okay? It leads to that the mercy form of the holy name leads to adherence to a mode of life that's more pure. And that leads to a mode of life that's totally spontaneous. But in the totally spontaneous stage, it doesn't mean one is, you know, wanton and reckless and casual. It just means one isn't bound by those things because one is already... So the residents of Vrindavan, they're on this spontaneous stage for sure. But they're not reckless and wanton. But if Krishna calls, the gopis abandon everything because of that spontaneous mood of love. And he honors. Very difficult. So what can I do to give you? All I can do is your glorious, you have to be satisfied with your own glorious qualities. You know that expression. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I don't know if this is going to work.
Maharaj, I had a question.
What's that?
I had a question, Maharaj.
Okay. I didn't see that.